is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. WGNS Action Line.
Now your host,
Scott Walker.
We're talking about the Rutherford County School System, and today in studio we have Dr. Jimmy Sullivan, the Director of Schools, and then also with us, James Evans, and he is the Chief Communications Officer for the schools. So what all is happening right now within the Rutherford County Schools? Because, I mean, the school year really just started.
It seems like it just started, but we're on day 17, 18, actually, for the school year. So we're well into it as far as our preparation and getting students into the school year with our teachers ready, and we're fully operational at this point.
And then how big is that student population at this point?
Very close to last year, so between 52 and 53,000. We grow quite a bit in the month of September, and so we wait until the end of September to really finalize where our numbers are. And that's because of all the people that move here from other locations that are used to school not starting till after Labor Day. So we see quite a bit of an uptick in these next couple weeks. At least that's been the trend the last couple years.
I guess that ranks us as what, the number three or number four largest system?
We're number four, so we are behind Memphis Shelby's first, Metro Nashville's two. We're catching Knox County, and then we've distanced ourselves from Hamilton quite a bit, so we're 5,000-6,000 larger than they are.
Man, it's hard to believe we've grown that much over the years.
It is, and I think what is even more interesting is that for everyone listening to know that as of enrollment last year, we're the 84th largest school system in America.
Wow.
And so when people think of Rutherford County being born and raised here, I don't think of Rutherford County being that large, but
I never would have guessed it.
That's how large we are. We are a large school system that tries to pride itself on still feeling small.
It's insane to think about. I mean, it really is, especially if you grew up here. Nobody would ever guess Rutherford County would have grown to be the 84th largest in the nation.
In the nation.
So what do we have in store for this school year, and what changes are being made this year? Because I know there are quite a few things that are happening.
Yeah, so a couple, if you don't mind, I'll just kind of start with what our goals are for the school year. So we talked, I go to each school at the very beginning to talk about what our goals are. First was consistency. We're a very high-performing school system. We want to make sure that we continue to focus on what we do well, which is student performance and making sure that we're that large school system that still feels small. And so making sure we stay consistent there. Being flexible, so we knew there were a couple of new things this year. One that was our choosing, one that was a new state law. Cell phones not being permitted during instructional time was new for our students. And then weapons detection system that has rolled out officially this morning. So that's why we're over here checking our phones to see how things have gone. And then third, just being aware that we are the 84th largest school system. So what happens nationally doesn't necessarily mean what's happening here in Rutherford County, but we still have to be aware of what's going on with those trends so that we can ensure that our students and teachers still have the best school system.
Whenever you roll out a new program like that weapons detection system, what types of events or occurrences do you expect for this first week or so?
Yeah, so going with that second goal of flexibility, going to each school, we talked about how we're going to have to be flexible. The first couple weeks, any time that you start anything new is going to be tough. And so reminding yourself what the purpose is to ensure that we put yet another thing in place to make our campuses as safe as possible for our staff and our students. And then just over-communicating what the first weeks are going to look like, over-communicating to students, but truly until they go through it, that's when the real learning occurs. So you can communicate as much as possible, but until students experience it, that's when the learning's going to occur.
Are there going to be false alarms or false positives these first couple of weeks?
Yes, and there should be continuously, because that means the weapons detection system's working, because it's looking for certain just mass of metal. And so throughout going through the school system, throughout the year, students are going to bring things. One of the examples they brought up was cans. So if you have a canned food drive and they're all sitting together, that's going to be a large mass of metal that it's going to detect. Going through last week, we had students bringing PlayStation 5, their mechanical keyboards, their monitors. Those are things that don't need to come to school. So I think that's part of the messaging with parents as well, is hey, just look at what your student's bringing. Make sure they clean out their backpack, because there's a lot of things that are going to go off that don't need to be at school.
Why do some kids bring gaming systems to school?
You know, the only thing I could think of was maybe we're going from one parent to the next at the end of the day. That's the only
logical
reason, but we're dealing with students, so whether or not it's logical, I'm not sure.
There was probably a tournament after school is what I'm thinking. They were going to a friend's house, and you know, my son would probably do that, some sort of NBA 2K or something like that tournament going on that afternoon. But Yeah, it was. He was fully set up. We were impressed how much he had put in that one backpack.
I'm always surprised how fast kids can set up their computer.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Or gaming system, whatever it is. Now, what about knives? Is that something that the machine will pick up?
It depends. We're not going to discuss the just overall security of everything it can detect. It really depends on the settings that we have in place. And so we can put it on settings that it'll catch any amount of metal, just like you were to go anywhere else, or we can set it to look for just really weapons that are going to have a large impact in a school setting.
Is there one of these machines at every entrance of each school?
Yes, there are for every entrance that students are going to go to. So not every door, but every entrance. And so we've modified our entrances, and parents are going to see that over the next couple weeks as we continually fine-tune. We may have to move an entrance here, move an entrance there, just to help with traffic flow and students entering the building.
Is this going to make it harder or take more time to get into the school each morning?
We talked to a lot of large school systems that have implemented this, some in Virginia that have done it kindergarten through 12th grade. And really, after the first couple weeks, students get used to it. It does take a couple extra seconds for students to be able to take something out of their bag, be able to go through. But as long as it doesn't hit as a positive for some reason, then it really should just be like walking through a normal set of doors. But the first couple weeks, yeah, we've communicated to our staff, to our parents, it's going to take a little bit longer.
And I was out at the racetrack this weekend. There was a race here, an IndyCar race, and my family and I went to it. They had the exact same system that we're using, which I thought, look at that. The exact same brand, everything. And there were thousands of people coming through, and we got through very quickly because people are getting more used to it in other places too, like concert venues and sports arenas, things like that. So it'll take a little adjustment, but my kids had their binders out this morning and walked right in, and they were ready for it.
Not like TSA where you have to
we're not taking off shoes or any of that. Yes.
good. Let's say a scenario does unfold where a child does bring a gun or a teenager brings a gun into school. What happens? And are they security guards in place? Are they sheriff deputies in place? Who's doing this?
So the scanning is by our employees, but there's a new law that went into place this year that all searches have to be done by a trained administrator. So our school principals, assistant principals are near each one of these. So if something alerts or hits, then the school administrators will be the ones that will be there. And there are school resource officers, depending on the actual grade and school, 1, 2, or 3 SROs at each one. So the school administrator, if it's a weapon, will ask for support from them as well.
Okay, so if the detection system does go off, then they know, the SRO knows to go directly there and see what's going on, and then I guess a search will happen and so forth.
Yeah, school principal will do the search and ask for support from administration or from the SRO if something's found.
Now, I don't know per year how many weapons are actually discovered in schools or with kids or even in parking lots.
Very few. A school system as large as ours, you're going to have things more likely in parking lots, but that doesn't mean that we ever need to let our guard down and make sure that we are. I mean, if you would have asked me 2, 3, 4 years ago, is this something I ever would have advocated to put in our schools, I would have said absolutely not. I think it goes totally against what schools are supposed to be for, but at the end of the day, when you start looking at, especially as events getting closer and closer, we are such a large school system with so many schools. I'm a math person and I don't like the probability. And so anything we can do to put in place to help promote safety and just another tool, it was a no-brainer for me.
So hopefully now even fewer. I mean, that should deter, I would guess, the students who were going to bring a gun to school or something along those lines. This would deter it, I hope.
I would hope so.
What else is happening as we get into this new school year?
Yeah, a lot of things to celebrate. So we have had ribbon cuttings for 3 new additions or schools. And so those are huge celebrations that have been a partnership between us and our funding body, the County Commission and the school board. And I think what makes it unique is that the school system was able to partner by using some of our own funds to be able to use that. And so first we opened Poplar Hill, our new elementary school. So the county school system used $30 million of our reserves, if you will, to help pay for that. So there was not a tax increase there. We had our addition at Smyrna High School, had ribbon cutting last winter, but we have now done our ribbon cutting for Riverdale High School. And then we have Oakland High School coming up September 28th. Those were huge additions, but because of our support with our local legislators and our new funding formula called TISA, that also did not require a property tax increase. They moved 10 cents off the property tax rate to be able to fund these buildings. And so that was a huge partnership. And then we also had the former Laverne Primary, which is now Simon Springs. We were able to renovate that facility using previous funds. So again, just using our resources smart. We always like to be fiscally conservative, but also making sure we provide the resources that our students need. So we've had those ribbon cuttings, and then we just approved our school board, so it's going through the county commission process last week, and we'll continue the next 2 weeks, is the purchase of land on kind of northwest side. And so that is, again, being funded by the school system's reserve funds, not a property tax increase.
So that's going to be for another future school?
Yes.
And what grades will that be for? And what area are we talking? I mean, what roads are in that area?
Yeah, so it's Rocky Fork and Lee Road. It's really very close to Stewart's Creek's campus. And with all of the growth that is happening west of I-24 and north, kind of in that Laverne cluster west of I-24, the Smyrna-Laverne cluster, so it would support that. It's at least a two-school campus. Our school board has not decided what type of facility we want to build there. Secondary school would be first, so a high school, middle school, potentially combo, but if it's a smaller campus, you could potentially get three schools there.
The cost of schools, the cost of construction in general, is so much higher today compared to, you know, even 5 years ago, but the costs have gone up greatly. How do you go about deciding on funding for what future school you're going to build and what you're going to leave out of those plans versus what you're going to put in?
Great question. So we are still utilizing the same plans that previous administration and counties funded. So we are, when we just opened Poplar Hill, it was a variance of going back all the way to John Coleman and Rocky Fork Elementary, and actually kind of Stewart's Creek Elementary. It's just you took a one-story building and made it a two-story building. And so you're using those plans. The middle school plans are still very similar to what we've been building since Stewart's Creek Middle in 2006. It's just, again, a one-story to a two-story. And then our high school plan has also not changed since Siegel High School in 2002 or 2003, whatever year that school opened. And so that helps save an architecture cost and keeps our build. I know that people talk about you build Taj Mahals, and we don't build Taj Mahals. If the buildings have columns, they are not our school buildings. And so we try to build them to look nice, but also in a way that is, again, fiscally conservative for our taxpayers.
And kind of give us an idea for the most recent school built, which would be in the Blackman area. That school cost about how much, and then how much are we looking for a future build?
Yeah. Poplar Hill Elementary was a little bit over $60 million. And so that one, again, was funded $30 million from our school reserves, and then $30 million was with county commission funding. The middle school, we had anticipated being about $85 million, and it actually came in under. And so that bid was a little bit over $72 or $73 million. I don't remember the numbers exactly. But as you get to a high school, of course, those are going to be your more expensive ones. So you're looking over $100 million for a high school. And if you build a large, comprehensive 2,500-student high school, you're looking over $140, $150 million.
So when the schools announce, you know, this is the cost to build such and such school, are they including in that the cost of that land, or has that already been, is that separate?
For us, it is usually already separate because we've already purchased it. Not to say in the future that that couldn't be part of it, but usually it's separate.
There's some site work that will be included,
yes,
in that figure, but the raw land is usually already purchased.
And that also includes, when we talk about that big figure, site work, road work, furniture, all the different things that go into a school.
There is a lot of costs that really go into that. Then you have to go through the hiring process to have enough teachers, yep, for that new school.
And we're actually in pretty good shape hiring. So you see a nationwide shortage on teachers, and we talk about consistency. One of the things we try to pride ourselves in is having a very, I don't even know the right word for it, but a positive culture. And we had less than 10, 15 certified openings for certified teachers. We have over 3,800 certified teachers, and to have less than 10 or 15 openings, we're doing things the right way. And that, so we're kind of going against that trend.
When you look at the numbers of students who are at each of the schools and the student population growth, how do you go about keeping up with the scores, their grades that they're making and everything, and having a good quality education? How do you go about keeping all that together? Because, I mean, you've got a lot going on all at the same time.
We do. We have an amazing instruction department, and so led by Dr. Kelly Chastain. She's our chief academic officer. That's also was my former role, and so I was over curriculum and instruction, and so it is still the passion area for me. I'm a teacher at heart. I serve as a business person now, but I'm still a teacher at heart. And so instruction is our main focus, and we talk about all the time, outside of the finances, outside of everything else, our students have to grow while they're with us academically. And that is our key message, that there are no excuses for students not to grow. And year after year, we continually hit that.
Let's brag on that just for a second. So we just found out last week that, well, we found out a month ago, we were able to announce last week that for the sixth consecutive year, the school district has been rated a level 5 by the state for growth. That's the highest you can get, and that's phenomenal. A lot of times you'll see a district maybe be a 5 for a year or two, and then they'll drop. We have consistently, from Dr. Sullivan's time being over the instruction department to now being director of schools, consistently carried that torch. And so his message is usually, we can't help where they are when they come to us, because we get students from all over the place, but we can definitely make sure that once they get to us that we make them grow. And a level 5, a level 3 is considered 1 year of normal growth. A level 5 means they're growing even further than they should have in a year. So it's just a tremendous thing for the schools to do that.
When the schools are doing as well as they have been doing, do you sometimes have parents who try to register their children who they may live in another county, but they try to figure out ways to go around that?
That never happens, Scott.
Not at all.
No.
How do you figure that stuff out? I mean, how do you know when that is taking place?
Well, a lot of times you'll catch it. The schools are really meticulous about going through the proof of residences or proofs of residence that we require. There's a couple of different things that parents have to turn in, but you know, there's probably some that still get through. We know that they're using someone else's address, but they've gotten pretty good at knowing. You start to see things like the kids are tardy, or you send mail to somebody and it gets returned, and those kinds of things. But it's good that we're that highly sought after, that people want to come here, that they're willing to try to cheat the system to get here.
I know in years past, people would use grandma's address, Uncle Ben's address, who we never visit, or, you know, just different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everything from family members to even friends' addresses. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you're not surprised these days. You've seen it all.
That's right.
We have. We've seen people change addresses, and you can see who, you know, just changes a letter to be able to try to say that it's their address. So we're pretty good at catching them. Again, say that nobody gets through wouldn't be truthful. But we're pretty good at catching it.
Yeah, I mean, property tax records are online now. You can search all that. It's not hard to find them. As soon as someone reports that, hey, Scott Walker's out of county, we can pretty quickly figure out if he is or isn't. So
yeah, it's awkward for me whenever that happens. But yeah, it is pretty easy, I guess, when you think about it, to verify somebody's address these days.
Yes.
Yeah. It would be a lot harder, I guess, harder to hide that kind of stuff. And then when parents come to pick up their kids, does anybody... Do people pay attention to the county that's written on the license plate as cars go through?
Yeah, they do. That sometimes, though, it's hard to pick, because if you buy your car in Davidson County, it may say Davidson County for a year if they don't get it switched over. Or if there's joint custody situations, one parent may live in another county and drive a kid in on Mondays or whatever. So, you know, it's one way we can check, but it's not always the most reliable.
Now, there are still, I guess, some cases where if a teacher may live in, let's say, Bedford County, but works here for the Rutherford County Schools, those situations are allowed if they register their kids through the, I guess, proper means.
Yeah, they can get what's known as a zone exemption. Employees can, to bring their child to the school where they work, or if they need a different grade level, into the same feeder system of where they work. So if I work at Blackman High, but I have an elementary child, and I live in Woodbury, I can get an exemption for my child to go to Blackman Elementary because I work at the high school. So those are all legal. It's just a benefit of their employment.
Now, one of the big things that I'm sure kids notice more than anything was the whole no cell phone use during class time. How did all of that go the first time you instituted that new rule?
I blame Dr. Sullivan. Let's get that on the radio. We both have teenage sons, and so we're getting it from both ends, you know, the general public sometimes, and then also on the home front with our kids too. But I'll let Dr. Sullivan explain that.
Overall, so going to the schools, again, we've talked about it. That was one of my messages of flexibility, that at the beginning of the year, this new cell phone bill is going to be tough. I think we all support it, because when our students focused on instruction, but we have a lot of parents who are used to texting their kids during the day, telling them how to do things. So trying to tell a kid to put their phone away when their mom or dad is texting them, I mean, that's tough. But I was wrong. I thought this would be a huge issue the first month of school, and overall our students have done amazing, and so have our parents. I've had maybe 2 emails since school started about cell phones. Haven't had a discipline referral yet about it. I'm going to knock on wood so that I don't jinx that. But in hearing from our schools, they're like, the kids have done fine.
So the complaints that you have received, were they mainly from parents or were they from the students?
One from a parent and then one from a group of students, and they did it amazing. They then came and spoke to our school board at a school board meeting, and they were phenomenal with their message. Absolutely phenomenal.
And it's interesting because I would guess, too, that, you know, I bet you when this happens, once it's put into place, I bet it's going to be the parents that complain more so than the kids.
Really, it goes down to students are going to really conform to whatever expectations we put in place. And they did. They did amazing.
I would imagine, just from the outside looking in, this would also tend to kind of cut down on some cyberbullying, too, to an extent.
It probably will. It's still too early to tell, but I can tell you that our schools have said the issues that they're having to address with social media has been less. We still have to address things that happen outside, but the during the day stuff has definitely subsided.
Okay, so a kid comes into school with their cell phone. What are they supposed to do throughout the day with that phone?
Yeah, they need to have it up. So it doesn't have to, we don't have the pouches or any of that type of thing. That you see a lot of districts do that. That is a huge expense that we just didn't feel like was necessary. The other part of the state law is that students have to be able to have access to it during the case of an emergency. And so that would have kind of gone against the spirit of the law. So as long as students have it up, it doesn't need to be out. They can't have headphones. That's probably been our big one, is that we don't allow them to have headphones because then technically they would be using their cell phone.
Yeah.
And so they just need to have it up. We don't need to see it.
You know, it is interesting. When I look back when I was in school, I never had a cell phone in school. So I never would envision that something like telephones in a school would be a problem.
Yeah.
But you guys have seen it as being a big problem year after year, so now this hopefully solves a lot of that.
It does, and it's definitely helped hearing from some of our teachers that kids seem more focused. And then I've had a couple parents reach out and say that their kid is exhausted by the time they come home because they used to be able to be on their phone during lunch or class change, and now their kid's having to socialize, and just the social interaction when they get home, they're done. They don't want to talk to anybody anymore.
Right. And I've got a middle schooler and a high schooler. They both have phones, and we had a little slogan that we put out this year, like, during the day, put your phones away. They both keep them in their backpacks. They leave them on typically, but it's on silent. So I can track them if I want to make sure they're still actually where they're supposed to be. But, it's good for parents, that peace of mind that after school, if they walk home or if they have a practice or something like that, they can still get a hold of their children. But during the day, there's really no reason to communicate. But my oldest son has made a couple of comments. I told him to make sure he rescheduled a doctor's appointment, and he kind of snidely said, well, I would, but I can't have my phone out of school, so you're going to have to do that for me. And so little jabs, but they all seem to be adapting just fine. But if you think about it, I mean, the iPhone came out in 07, so that's 18 years. These kids have grown up in the smartphone era that we weren't in.
Yeah.
And so it's really a part of their lives. But I think we can all probably benefit from a little break from screen time, you know, on all fronts.
Yeah, and on the socialization side of things, you know, I didn't think about that part of it. But, man, this really does kind of force the kids to talk to one another.
It does. Yeah. And that was one of my concerns. I thought, all right, now they're socializing again. Maybe they don't have that skill set. Is that going to lead to some issues? And so far it hasn't. I'm sure at some point it will, but so far it hasn't.
School bullying overall, you know, I know I mentioned cyberbullying. That's probably down because of maybe at the end of the year we'll know for a fact that it's been down because of the lack of cell phones. But bullying in general, is that still an ongoing battle, or what does that look like today?
Yeah, it's something that we always deal with because you have things that happen in school, out of school, students trying to figure out where they are. And as students move into middle and high school, you go away from the parents being the most important thing to them. And I'm dealing with that right now as an eighth grader. And so it's their peer group that's the most important. And so what we try to educate students and parents on is the difference between bullying and conflict. And so bullying is when you really have a difference in power. And so somebody's truly exerting power over someone else. And that conflict is normal and natural. And so that's how they are figuring out how to adapt and have meaningful conversations with different opinions. But when somebody is truly having and exerting power, then we need to get involved. And usually it comes from parents making us aware. And so that's one of the hardest things. Like, how come you didn't know about it? Well, until somebody tells us, it's hard for us to know about it.
Yeah. Again, we're talking about the Rutherford County Schools this morning, and today in studio we have Dr. Jimmy Sullivan, the Director of Schools, and then also with us, James Evans, and he is the Chief Communications Officer for the schools. Right now the time, 8:45, we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back. If you have any questions, you can text those in right now at 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450.
When the unexpected happens, fire, water, or storm damage, Farrah Construction can help. Farrah Construction is also there to help when a car slams through the wall, and that seems to happen more often these days. I'm Ron Hall. Let our family at Farrah Construction help you. Call Farrah Construction, and we'll board up, put down tarps, secure your home or business until the insurance coverage is approved. I'm Ron Hall. Shop local. Let our family business help you. Farrah Construction Company.
Are you tired of constantly spending money on sprays and other things to control mosquitoes around your home? If so, come by Holden Hardware and get the Spartan Mosquito Eradicators. When used properly, the Spartan Mosquito Eradicators will kill mosquitoes. Come by Holden Hardware on the square and get the Spartan Mosquito Eradicators. This year, make mosquito control easier and cheaper. Come by Holden Hardware on the square and get the Spartan Mosquito Eradicators.
That brisket came from your cow, right?
Yep, raised her, named her, thanked her, and now she's dinner.
Rutherford County Farmers Market. There's something fresh every week. Tuesdays and Fridays, 7 to 1, at Lane Agri Park in Murfreesboro on John R. Rice Boulevard.
Hi, Murfreesboro. This is Amanda from Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street. We have not forgotten about our reptile lovers either. Here at Animal City, we have a great selection of products for our cold-blooded friends, too. Here at Animal City, we have a full range of habitats, substrates, and other accessories. We have a great selection of products for our reptile lovers. We are so proud to be Murfreesboro's pet destination for 35 years. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street, family owned and operated.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
We're talking about the Rutherford County School System this morning and have guests in studio from the county schools. We have the director of the schools, Dr. Jimmy Sullivan, and also James Evans, Chief Communications Officer, both again with us today. And this school year, some changes, some bigger than others. Of course, the weapons detection system, is that one of the biggest changes, or is it the cell phone and the lack of students being able to use those cell phones? Which one's bigger?
Probably both, just in their own right. And we had them. We wanted to make sure that cell phones were first, and we wanted to do all our training right for weapons detection. So that's why we started weapons detection in September, so that it wasn't both right at the beginning of the school year.
Now, are there any other new things that are happening this year?
So I'm hoping that we will have a year that we can focus on academics and focus on students and our teachers. There's a couple other items. Of course, we talked about the purchase of the new land for high school. We will eventually get to where we were requesting funding for that. So that'll probably be towards the April, May period of the budget cycle. And then we will have to finalize, our board will have to finalize middle school rezoning. So we did district-wide rezoning last year with elementary and high school. Middle school zones have been published for over 2 years, but I'm sure we'll have to make some tweaks to those. And that'll be in November, December, when parents can hear more about that, because we have a new middle school that'll be coming online. So anytime you have a new school coming online, we have the two largest middle schools in the state, in Blackman Middle School and Rockville Middle, so this new middle school helped relieve overcrowding from both of those.
It seems like zoning issues are something that, you know, you'll have some complaints here, some people will be positive about it over here, but you'll always have some type of stressor when it comes to school zoning.
You will, and I remember James last year, he told me, because we'd had a pretty good 2 years we haven't rezoned yet, and he said, just know that, you know, you're going to take some heat for rezoning. It doesn't matter what you do, you're just going to take heat for rezoning. It's my first time going through it, and that's definitely the truth, but at the end of the day, you have to understand that parents, where they're coming from, that either moved here or lived here for a certain school zone, and it is my job then to make sure that all of our schools are as effective as possible so that it truly doesn't matter what school you're zoned to.
And you know, it's interesting. I know because we've talked to different parents over the years, and some of what goes with that whole school zone and what makes one parent upset where it doesn't another, it could be from their personal experience from when they were in
Absolutely.
School, which would have been, you know, for a lot of these parents, 20, 25 years ago in some cases. So it may not be a logical argument for them to say, well, I don't want them to go here because of X, Y, Z. Well, we did away with that problem 30 years ago.
Absolutely. Yep.
What else do you hear from parents when it comes to that zone, that school zone where they're in and where they're possibly going to be moved to?
One of the biggest things that we've done over the years, which is good and bad, is that we've gotten where we build those three school complexes, and parents really like those, of course, but we always have a situation because middle schools have half the grades of an elementary, so you're going to have multiple elementary schools feeding into a middle school, and then typically multiple middle schools feeding into one high school because they're twice as large as the middle school. So you're never going to have it where everyone who can go to those three schools, you know, it's going to feed from different places, and they don't understand that. And sometimes we get the complaint that, hey, but I live closer to this school than this other school that I'm zoned for, because they're right on the edge of that zone. But like Dr. Sullivan said, we also have to balance the numbers out too, so that we're not overloading one school and then another one that has availability that we should be using. So that's just the ongoing thing with a county that's growing as fast as we are. The county commission is really good at working with us and trying to fund these projects, but they also want to make sure that we're using all of our available seats before we come asking for these millions of dollars.
Yeah, and I do think that our school board and our county commission, I think a lot of credit goes to them. The county commission's funded over $350 million in the last, I guess when we asked, 28, 29 months, and I don't know a time in history they have funded that much. So that shows how strong our partnership is.
One of the questions that was texted into us this morning was asking about, Will is asking, are there any grades that are more overcrowded than other grades right now within the county school system?
Yeah, high school, middle and high school is where we're growing it, and it's a changing demographic for us. We were growing at elementary the largest, and as homes have become more expensive, we are seeing less of families moving in who are just starting out and more of families who are more established with older students and older children. And so we are growing much quicker at the middle and the high school level.
And I think it's safe to say that homes are only going to get more expensive in the future.
Absolutely. And that's our only area that we're down in, and we're down just about 100 kids as kindergarten. And so that's a unique trend, and it's statewide, and it doesn't match our birth rate in the county. Our birth rate's up, so we should expect kindergarten students to be increasing. And so the only thing that really lends itself to is that, and that's for us, charter schools, everyone is down in kindergarten for the most part from what we've heard. And so it just lends to parents not being able to afford to live here.
There's a potential, though, that next year we're going to see a kindergarten boom because five years ago was COVID. And so there may be a bubble in the pipeline, so to speak, and we may see a boom in kindergarten because people were at home more, of course, and I'm not going to go into details.
Okay, I was just curious.
How does that happen, Jay?
Not sure, but birds and the bees were probably busier 5 years ago, and so you know, we think there could be a boom in kindergarten next year, but only time will tell on that.
You know, I'm curious because it seems like we're hearing about people who have kids a lot later in life than they once did. Are you seeing that in the school itself? You know, once you start going to those parent-teacher conferences and the PTO meetings and all that stuff, are there or is there a difference in that age of parent compared to, let's say, even 5 or 10 years ago?
I haven't noticed it yet, but that'll definitely be something that I look for, because that is not something that was on my radar. I don't know about you, James.
No, the birth rate thing, that you never knew you were going to have to analyze all of that stuff when you get into the school district.
Sure.
I mean, it does, when you're growing like this, you have to look at all these different factors. But, we've seen that anecdotally, of course, that there are parents. My wife and I had a third child that we were not planning later in life, too. And so we've got an elementary school age child still, too. We were at a Labor Day pool party yesterday, and we're looking around, and among our friends group, we're the only one that still has one that age. I mean, we love him, of course, and
you decided to keep him at this point.
Absolutely, he's ours. But you know, it there's things like that. But as far as a whole, statistically, I don't know if we know that.
Another question we have here, are there enough school counselors and resources for students who may need extra support in each and every school?
That's definitely a fine balance. Unfortunately, that's something that has become political over the last couple of years, and as a school system, our job is to educate kids. Unfortunately, you get the political noise behind that of your job is to only educate kids and leave the mental health aspect to mental health professionals or to the parents, and fundamentally, I agree with that, but the reality is some students come to us with those needs that the parents either can't provide or don't know, and so we meet the state ratio of school counselors, but at our, really at all of our schools, it's a counselor to 1 to 400 to 500 kids. And so you have a difference, and I think that's good for the community to understand. School counselors are not mental health therapists, and that they have a completely different training program. So what they can provide is completely different than what a therapist could provide.
I was about to say, it seems like over the years, I don't know if the general public has taken on a different thought process of what school counselors are, but it does seem like it's almost like the general public, they assume that school counselors are mental health counselors.
Yeah, definitely not. Completely different, again, certifications, college pathways. School counselors are there to help with general, just, you know, maybe a student is anxious about coming to school, helping them with their career path, with course selections, and just good habits. But as far as dealing with clinical diagnosis, that is something that a school system is not involved in.
You know, I wonder when that thought process changed, because when I was in high school, the only thing I thought of the school counselor for was to help, you know, figure out, okay, you need to take this class, and this class, and if you want to go to college here, you got that kind of stuff.
I think at any time that you have issues in society, a lot of times the schools are the place that you try to fix that. Right or wrong, that's where society places it. And so that's probably where that came from, is that, all right, we have mental health issues, let's see if the school can do that. And again, that's not our place. Our place is to educate kids.
It's kind of like police officers as well today. I mean, they're almost social workers / psychiatrists and psychologists,
right?
All at the same time.
Definitely.
But things have changed a lot, I think, in general. What are some of the larger, you know, more prominent questions you get asked these first couple of months of the school year? I mean, especially from parents, what are some of their biggest concerns or thoughts?
Zoning are big ones. Am I going to be able to stay at this school campus for the entirety of my kids' educational career? And that's something that just really depends on where they live, and we can't answer yet. Safety, of course, and then just the academic performance of our schools. And so those are the big ones. And James, you hear from as many parents as I do, and then you have individual issues with discipline that parents get frustrated with.
Yeah, relationships is the big one. You know, it's just whether it's a good or a bad relationship between parents are always calling, asking for help because child's getting picked on or not fitting in or not connecting. And, you know, some of the things we talked about earlier with the restrictions on cell phones, we're hoping that will take care of some of that, because people have lost some of that, those skills on how to operate in a crowd, basically.
Yeah. And when it comes to discipline, that's changed over the years too.
It has, but we also have, in becoming director, one of the things coming back from COVID is that you wanted to make sure that the rules and expectations were in place for students. And so we have really put a lot of emphasis, our school board has as well, of putting behavior interventions at our elementary school, expanding some of our options in our alternative school, and then unfortunately we've expelled a lot more students than we have. And because if a student is showing behavior that they are not, that's not appropriate for a school setting, you know, you hate to place that. I don't take that responsibility lightly, but we have to have order in our school so that everyone else can learn.
I know we'd only have like 30 seconds left, but expelling and in-school suspension, those types of punishments, do those work well? I mean, do you see a difference in the kids when they return to the classroom?
It really depends on the individual kid and the support you get from families as well.
Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Again, we've been talking about the Rutherford County School System with the school's director, Dr. Jimmy Sullivan, and also James Evans, the Chief Communications Officer.